Greenlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Washbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Washbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and it's about, just 2 minutes in. Good. So we got almost the full hour. And Rich Migliori, who was tied up on Monday, Rich had all kinds of farm life activity going on, including the farrier and much more. So I wanted to slip Rich in, and the timing is good, Mig, because I just had another one of these discussions with a horseman that is being more or less drawn into a battle to save a placing, in this case a stakes win for his horse and his owner, by the crop strike count. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you know how badly I miss riding. Like, I have the most unbelievable vivid dreams of riding. And all of this nonsense, and I use the word with the full meaning of the word nonsense, makes me miss riding less. So maybe that's one good thing that came out of it. I really like the things that need to be focused on and should be focused on, and this is where we drew the line. This is the hill we're going to die on. It makes no sense to me, Steve.
Well, and I don't know if you had a chance to hear Fincher, but he brought up one portion of the conversation that has to be stressed, which is that if a rider is cognizant of how many times he's used the implement, and then is confronted with a situation where he has to do something with the reins that could then be construed as restraining the horse. He said, what are we going to have to listen to at that point? Look at him. He's stiffing the horse here. He's pulling him up before the wire. He's letting the other horse pass him. There's unintended consequences involved here that are completely unnecessary. And it's mind-boggling that we're having to have this conversation, repeatedly now at this point.
Well, again, I I'll go back to this before I'll address, how I feel about a lot of this. This is the thing that we've decided is the most crucial thing for the perception of our game. This is it. This is, okay, wow, we're making progress here, aren't we? I mean, it's absurd, the absurdity of it. But that being said, how do you take a job, a career, of being a jockey and take the instinct out of it? It's a very instinctual thing. You have to be able to react and go with the moment and what your instincts are telling you and your experience with anticipation. And I'm all for the proper use of the crop. I'm all for education. If it's abused, and that could mean a horse winning by five and still being ridden like he's in a head-to-head stretch drive, or it could be a horse that is obviously tired and spent and backing up, and a guy is going to it. Then come down hard. But maybe this is the problem. The people that have to make those decisions need to be educated well enough that they can say, no, that does not go, and explain it to the guys that, that you know, are making that mistake. But when I was riding good, Steve, no matter what instructions I got, no matter what I was told, I rode in the moment. When I wasn't riding well, oh, the guy said, the horse don't like to be inside it. Nope, the moment's gone. It's passed. I blew the race already. So this is what we're going to encumber riders with that already have an incredibly dangerous job. Now they've got to think about, I saw three or four horses. Luzzy lost on a horse the other day. He would have won. And I could see it. The horse got there and kind of got to floating and like, oh, I'm done. And he had already used his six strikes and couldn't hit him again. And the horse would have won. Now, years ago, the crops we used, they were, you know, I don't want to say cruel, but they were not kind. Now, you're hitting them with a pool noodle, and you can only hit them with that pool noodle six times. And now the betting public's getting the worst of it, because Luzzy certainly would have won on that horse. So if you like that horse, you know, why can't he remind him one more time in the shadow of the wire? Oh, because he's already counted six. Come on. You've taken the whole feel of it, the whole touch, the horsemanship, the instinct. You've sucked that out of the game. I'm missing riding less and less. I'm telling you, straight up.
How readily would, and you could use yourself as an example. How do you retrain yourself, Rich, to be cognizant of how much you're using the stick? You know, there are guys, obviously, and really I should have this conversation kind of like a round table maybe with some jocks, including Joel Rosario, who famously rarely goes to the stick. But how would you adjust?
You know, well, I mean, obviously you've got to be more mindful of it. And just the whole culture has changed. When I was a kid, and this was the wrong way, I'm not saying this was the right way, but this is how far we've evolved. If you didn't mark a horse, you were considered weak. Now, was that right? No, it was obviously wrong. But going whole hog completely the other direction, I just don't agree with it. You've taken the nuance of the job away from the riders. You've actually now are inhibiting them to the point where they can't react in the moment. All horses are different, Steve. You know, it's like people. Some people have short attention spans. Some horses have short attention spans. You know, we talked about Georgie Chavez in the past. You know, people would say how strong George was. I never considered George that strong. I considered him busy. He would peck at a horse, and a horse that maybe was looking to pull up or you know, lose interest, he would kind of tip tap tip tap tip tap, keep them going forward, keep their mind forward, and he was very successful that way. I mean, you're taking the tool away from a rider to be able to do his job and do it in a way that he's comfortable with. You know, I just don't see how this is the answer to the woes of our game. When I can come up with a lot of other things that, man, they should get strict about and crack down about, and again, if a rider isn't using it properly, then the penalty should be severe. I don't think the owner should be punished. I mean, we've gotten so, and I get it, and I'm, you know, people are going to say, well, I don't think, you know, that the bettors are important. No, I understand how important the bettors are. So the bettors aren't being punished for, you know, a rider's infraction because they're not disqualifying the horse for wagering purposes, but you're disqualifying from partaking in the purse. So now the owners are less important than the betting public. And let's throw in another scenario. You want to get nefarious here. A guy says, you know what, I can win this race, but I know this horse really needs to be reminded constantly. I don't care how many times I hit him, because we're going to bet our lungs on this horse today. And I'll take the days, and they can keep the purse, because I'm going to cash my ticket. And while other riders are going, well, I'm going to follow these stupid rules, someone's cashing a bet. I mean, you want to put layers onto this, let's go in that direction.
No, that's a tremendous, another tremendous example of a potential unintended consequence, to juxtapose against what Todd just talked about, Todd Fincher, perception of a rider that, puts the stick away because he knows he's reached his limit and now is in a position where he may have to work the reins for a horse that's getting in or getting out, and suddenly, oh, that guy's pulling him up. Oh, that guy's that. He had to finish third.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what we're dealing with.
No, but I mean, it's frustrating for me to watch, let alone feel what these guys and girls are going through. I mean, it's really unfair. You're taking an already difficult job and making it that much more difficult. And I'm not saying there's not room for evolution and refining certain things. But if you genuinely look at the issues our industry has, and like every industry, there's things that could be better, right? This is the thing. This is going to fix everything. I mean, think about it, the absurdity of that. I don't know.
You're 100% right.
It's beyond me. It really is. Who decided that this was the thing? Who made that decision? I'm just curious. Did all the industry stakeholders get together and say, guys, I know what the problem is. It's the crop. We get rid of the crop, and our game will suddenly be healthier than it ever was. Come on. What are we doing here?
We've heard all these. Yeah, exactly. We've heard this refrain in countless directions. The one that has really been the source of a lot of the issues. The Lasix, if we ban Lasix, that's gonna bring people aren't betting because of this is just like the steroid conversation from 12, 13 years ago. People aren't betting because they don't want to see the horses getting steroids. Okay, 18 months, we banned steroids. Yeah, that did nothing that had nothing to do with the handle numbers. Just like the Lasix has nothing to do with the handle numbers. In fact, if anything, it's inhibiting it. The confusion and the concerns over horses going off and on Lasix on and off is only making people bet less, not more. It's very frustrating to be led around by a minority rule of people that are it's the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah, and again, Steve, listen, I'm all for it. Look, in used properly, the crop is an aid, not a punishment. When a horse is doing what's being asked of them, then you put it away. You don't continue to drive that point home to the horse. Once a horse gives you the response that you've asked for, if you continue to use it, it goes from an aid to a punishment. Now, years ago, I rode a really nice filly for Alan Jerkins. I was a kid. I was like 19 years old. Won a stake at Aqueduct Honor. I forget her name, top account, top issue. Anyway, it was for Centennial. And she was on the lead, and it was a stake race, a $100,000 race, which is a big deal back then. And, you don't have a rearview mirror. I kind of sensed that horses were around me, so I set her down. I hit her four times. I hit her twice on the right side, twice on the left side. She won by four or five lengths. Sure, I had no need to hit her. you know, I got excited. I was a kid. It was a mistake, admittedly. So I came back, and I was all happy, and Alan was very upset with me. And I couldn't grasp it. I was like, but Alan, Chief, we won. Like, and he goes, yeah, you come back to the barn and get it to eat now. You could have made it an easy race on her. You made it a hard race on her. He took me off of her. She ran back in a bigger stake at Belmont, and he put Samin on her because he was upset with me. Samin was looking around. He looked between his legs. He's looking around because he knows why I got fired. And the filly's ears were up, and she's looking around. She lost her focus, and she got nailed on the money. Now he got fired because he didn't ride her hard enough. So we're throwing all these things into the mix. You got to allow people to do their job. You can't micromanage everything. And, again, I'm all for strict guidelines, but this counting how many strikes and then an owner's going to lose this person. Steve, you're an owner. You know how hard it is to make ends meet in this game. You're going to really drive people out of this game if they start losing purse money because of somebody else's, I don't even see error, somebody didn't quite follow rules that need tweaking. How's that for a kind way to say it?
Well, again, to drive home the point that this is class warfare, the people that are administering this, they want those people to leave the game. Because in their mind, if the purse money means anything to you, you don't belong in this sport. So that's the source of all of our issues. If you can't take your bleeder and put him on the sidelines for 9 months, you don't belong in here. That's what this is. Period.
Now, the days of one person owning a lot of horses compared to now where a lot of people own one horse, those days are over. You know, notable exceptions, obviously, but the days of Darby Dan and Green Tree and Rokeby and, you know, I mean, those days, that's a bygone era. And, you know, you want to talk about evolving. If you can't evolve with what the model is now, you know, forget PETA, forget, you know, any groups that want to, you know, do away with racing, and they've been effective in other arenas. We're going to do it to ourselves. And it's, mm-hmm. it's just very frustrating for me to watch. You know, I saw Dylan Davis get beat a nose for second the other day. He had run out of strikes. Horse got there, decided he was very content to run alongside a horse. Horses are herd animals. Some are herd leaders. Some are followers. Some are happy to be in the herd, not necessarily away from the herd. So now, as a jockey, I've lost my ability to instinctually know the kind of horse I'm on. And as he's getting to a horse and he decides, oh, hey, I've got a friend, I'll stay here with my friend, and I've already used up my allotment, and I can't say, hey, we got a job to finish here. Oh, and I'm sorry, you know, I had a show her that horses, you have a personal valet, they're groomed. Their bed gets turned down twice a day. Oh, and they probably get a mint left on their pillow. They have a personal masseur. They have a dentist that pays house calls, a doctor that pays house calls, a chiropractor. Oh, they don't have to go to the shoe store. The shoes come to them, and they get fitted for the shoes. I mean, come on. I love horses as much as anybody, if not more than most. I mean, I've got pasture ornaments here. I have a horse that I won a race on 19 years ago that does nothing but eat and get taken care of. And, you know, I had new shoes put on him the other day. He's not ridden. He's a pasture ornament. So this nonsense that we don't care, that we don't do the right thing by our horses, I'm not the minority. I'm the majority of people that care about these horses and take care of them. We also do derive our living from them. So, you know, it's not one or the other. You can be both. I've made a good life and a good living because of horses. I'm so aware of that I pay it back as much as possible. Why do you think I did those backstretch tours all summer? So that money would go directly to Thoroughbred Retirement, to TRF. Did I need to be at the track 6 o'clock two mornings a week to give 2.5 hour tours for myself? I did it because it was good for the horses. And again, I'm not the minority. So again, we're going to go back to, well, this is what's wrong with our game, the crop. Come on, give me a break. Yeah. People forget the days when not only were they weren't crops, they were whips. Now they're crops, okay? And some riders wore spurs. That wasn't that long ago. We did away with it.
Yep.
We got away from
yep.
that. But again, what troubles me the most is inhibiting riders from being instinctual. That troubles me.
I thought that since we didn't get a chance to talk earlier in the week, I thought this was a perfect chance to let you kind of riff on the topic. There's so many tangents to it that we haven't even gotten to, which includes putting the onus on the stewards in the various jurisdictions to do this work for ISA. I mean, it's just there's just so much of this that is misguided and inappropriate and unnecessary. That's what's so maddening, Rich.
Well, I think you used the correct word there, misguided. I just don't agree with that. This is going to fix anything or make anything better. I'm all for anything that makes it better for the horses. Again, this to me is an awfully, what's the word I'm looking for? Odd place to draw the line in the sand. My feeling, I'm all for continually making things better. I just don't understand how this makes things better. If anything, I think
exactly.
It makes it worse. I remember being a kid in Brooklyn. No, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Pat.
No, you're fine.
No, I mean, I remember being a kid in Brooklyn, and you go out to the track with some of the bigger guys on the street. I was always like the youngest one, running with my older brothers and their friends, and get out to Aqueduct, and a horse get beat a nose or a short distance for third, and they'll. Ninth race triple, because back then you had the daily double was the first two, win, place, and show wagering, and the ninth race triple. That was it. That was your wagering menu, right? And a horse would just get beat for third, and the talk on the train, if they didn't feel the rider gave 100%, was that guy was a mutt. Now, you see that mutt, he didn't care about third. That cost me, the try. I would have made, $150, whatever it is, right? And I remember that impression on me as a kid. Like when I became a jockey, I was never going to be a mutt. I was always going to be on my belly because third meant something to the betting public. Fourth meant something to the owner. How many mornings I'd be up at, 4:30 in the morning when I was a kid living at the track, and I would set everybody's tack. That was one of my chores as the apprentice. And I'd open the Frenchman's kitchen at 5 a.m. I'd be there when they opened the doors. And I would sit and have coffee with a variety of racetrack people, some guys who had two or three horses scrapping out a living with their horses, how much fourth meant to them. So when I got my opportunity, I was never going to let those people down. I was never going to be a mutt. And now if someone was to watch the way guys are finishing on some horses, because, and again, some horses don't need it, but some do. Horses are like people. Some have a short attention span. Some are overly generous. Some are herd leaders. They're dominant. Some aren't. But to take that ability away from a rider to be able to get the most out of their mounts, how is that good for the game?
No. That's exactly right. This is a tilting of windmills, if there ever was. Rich,
I feel terrible because nothing. I've done nothing to allay your angst. I feel dead. If anything, I've added to it.
That's all right. That's all right. No, I didn't expect. I I wanted people to hear, how a professional race rider, and I'll do it with Tony tomorrow too. And we've already broached this a variety of ways and on a variety of occasions, going back to the situation of Monmouth last year, where they completely took the stick away, and that was, that was a disaster in seven different directions. But anyway, let's get excited.
I'm sure you got other people to get to.
That's all right.
I thought you were kicking me up.
No, I am, but that's all right. Next week we'll be able to dig in and follow up from another huge weekend. We got the 2-year-olds back coming with the Champagne and the Frisette, and some good racing ahead. Obviously, the Woodward and more. So when we talk Monday, it'll be all kinds of racing conversation.
All right, sounds good, Steve. I'm sorry if I didn't make you feel better.
No, that's not your job. That's not what this is. This is not it's not a mutual feel good opportunity. It's the reaction to the realities of the game, and that's all. That's what we're doing.
Absolutely. Listen, have a great day. I will talk to you soon. I'm going to Pauling. They spotted a moose in the Pauling Preserve today. I'm going to go try to find the moose.
A moose. Find a moose
in Pauling,
and squirrel.
Right near Akendale.
I love it. Moose and squirrel. watch for Natasha and Boris while you're at it. Rich Migliori, everybody.
Bye.
I can't resist. Nick Tamaro is going to join us. We haven't talked to Nick in 2 weeks, plus 3 weeks, I guess, because we missed him the last two. And we're not even going to talk Belmont at Aqueduct. We're going to talk. We'll do that on Friday, I hope, with Nick. But Nick has looked at this Assiniboia pick five, and it's over $500,000. So you got to figure, and with as much attention as it gets, Assiniboia has become, it's got its followers, and I think people are going to be excited to play this tonight. The sequence starts in race three. And it's 6x7x8x8x9, so it's just enough. And given the level of horse we're talking about, it's plenty tricky. There's two of these races at least where the entire fields are basically inseparable. I mean, the nightcap, it looks like eight horses can win, including the 20-1 shot. And there was one race I came up with where a 15-1 shot was my second choice. So this doesn't look easy. Nick Tamaro, hello already. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I haven't talked to you in 2 weeks, so I don't care that it's a
Cinnabon. I don't even know if it's been 2 weeks. It's been forever.
Yeah, there was a variety of things. You were traveling, and you were in Dallas. You were getting on a plane. You were getting off a plane. You were renting a car and swearing at the clerk. Just like Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. No, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I made that up.
No, I'm not I definitely swear, but definitely not at a clerk. But it's possible. I'm more of a John Candy character.
Well, Del Griffith ran the other day, right? He didn't run very well. I think he was beaten a pole. But Del Griffith came up on the show last week on Friday. That's kind of funny, or Thursday. We'll save the New York conversation for tomorrow, for Friday, because we should have a very nice weekend ahead, and they'll draw the Saturday card. But this situation at Assiniboia, and have you played this force out before?
Well, I was a COVID in Assiniboia devotee, so I got much more familiar with it at that point in time. I've watched a lot of their races, generally retiming them because they have some issues with timing, but I can't say I've gotten terribly involved from a wagering perspective of late. But it's that's a big prize out there, and you know, it's a good sequence for the average rank and file horse player, because it looks like it could be a little chalky, and even if it's not, it's such a big carryover out there for everybody to shoot at, you know. And I would prefer these jackpot bets, when they are payout days, give people an opportunity to win.
Well, exactly. We talk about that with Andy too, and you know, the other part of this is the dollar increment, right? The 20 cent makes this that much more appealing.
Yeah, no question about it. It makes it considerably more appealing. It makes it much more affordable for the people that want to get involved, and I think that's kind of the key, is that if you can do it at a relatively low cost basis, I think that helps a great deal. No question about it.
Well, let's see what you made of this group. And actually, let me also pull up, because I did the handicapping, but I haven't made final decisions. It doesn't start until 9:35 Eastern time, 8:35 Central. And let me pull up a time form for our conversation too, Nick, and see how some of the pace pictures were ended up being drawn in here. I'm a little curious because I looked at it from the race flow of on Thoroughgraph, but I haven't looked at time form yet. So let's get into the third. We'll go up to Winnipeg and six horse field, and it sure felt like this first leg in the third. If you got a tiny budget, the six, seems like way the horse to beat.
Yeah, so the interesting thing, and I actually downloaded my PPs on Sunday, Sunday or Monday, and the six was entered on Monday, and she ran. And she ran rather poorly.
Oh, that's right, so, that's right, that's right. That's
yeah,
right.
So I don't know, I mean, is it possible that she makes her third start in 8 days? I don't think it's impossible, but I do think that she looks very different when you download today, and you have that race in there. There's not going to be, I don't think there's a buyer figure in there. There's definitely not a time form US figure. But she didn't run well. And it was a comparable, it was a little bit tougher class level. I didn't realize they go down to 1500, but this is a $1,500 time restricted claimer. So, you know, she looks a little different in that sense. I felt like if you were, so basically, I mean, as far as our conversation goes, just obviously take a look at whether she's going to run. Because if she runs, I still think bad recent race aside, you want to at least be aware that she is a win candidate on some of her better efforts. And it's a little disconcerting that while it looked like she was taking a pretty clear step forward since she got into this barn of Tom Gardapi Jr., she clearly lost her momentum. And that kind of puts you in the really precarious position of choosing between the 1, 2, and 5, which, you know, is kind of the definition of a smorgasbord with bad food. So it's, I would say that the best of those three would probably now become the favorite in the 5 Lady Sunset, and that really just has to do with the drop in class. The problem with Lady Sunset is that since she joined this barn, she's not run well. I mean, she ran well in June of 21. She went to the sidelines. She has come back in 2022, has been awful. The only thing you can say to her credit is that it's pretty clear her trainer was just not placing her at the proper level. And she didn't need to continue to run against the 5 claimers because she was just not capable of handling that level. That being said, I mean, it's very hard to take a horse with that kind of form, even on the drop. I think the interesting horse is the 1 Enhanced Finance, who is first off acclaimed by a guy who has had 3 starters at the meet, 2 runner-up finishes in the third, and I know that obviously doesn't include a win, but I think she's got enough speed from the inside to be a real threat, and, you know, this feels like a race that could easily become a merry-go-round. So assuming the 6 scratches, I'm going to use the 1 and 5. I'll probably use the other Tom Gardapi Jr. entrant, who failed last time as the favorite but can easily bounce back, going from 2,500 down to 1,500. That's the 2 time for a song. If the winner doesn't come from those 3, I'll make it an early night.
Interesting, because I thought that race for the 5,000 non-3 lifetime by La Chica de Fuego, the 4, got the 42 buyer in there.
Yeah.
And one of the other things that caught my eye is, because I know they listen, the team at Country Life. This is a Country Life Maryland-bred five-year-old mare, a Friesian Fire, out of a Partner's Hero mare. And she ran a decent race for 5,000. This is 1,500. You know, she takes a second drop down. I thought that horse was a little intriguing and had potential to knock people out.
Yeah, I think one of the things she has going for her also is that she seems to consistently get bet and really while underperforming. Now, I will admit, I didn't dig into that July 25th race and see if the figure has held up. You kind of come to the conclusion, looking at her form, that it might be a little high because she really wasn't running at that level prior and hasn't run at that level since. So, you know, you might wonder if it's, you know, a couple points high. It did not come up appreciably faster than she had been running on either time form or Thoroughgraph. So it might just be a race that sort of lives out in Never Never Land. But that being said, you know, we're really grasping at straws here. So, you know, you don't want to overlook anybody because yep. we're talking about a race that could easily be won rather comfortably with a low 30s buyer figure.
Exactly. All right. Second leg is a 7,500 straight 7,500 for three quarters. And I thought this was very competitive, the second leg.
Yeah, worth noting here, the 1-3 Dictator and Life's Been Good so far both ran on Monday. Neither of them ran particularly well. So we'll see how they end up going. I mean, again, it's totally unknown as to whether they might run again. I will admit that I do think Dazzling Mischief is in a pretty favorable spot. Stalking outside looks like kind of the main outside speed, which is always an advantage, I think. This was a horse that was taken by a pretty high percentage barn and didn't exactly get the cleanest of trips last time out. Was in the mix, shuffled out, re-rallied. You know, those are the kind of races I think you want to bet horses back off of. I was a little surprised he was so short on the morning line, especially given that there are some horses with speed figures in here that are awfully competitive, including his stablemate, Mark E. Well, who really, if you believe there's enough pace in here, this is clearly the horse to beat. He's in good form. He's held his form recently at this level. High percentage trainer. And he should get, you know, he should get at least a decent pace to run at. So I was kind of a little bit Captain Obvious here, 1, 2, and 7 as main plays. A Dictator, again, coming off that Monday race if he comes back. Now, that being said, if he and the three were both coming back, I'd be more inclined to bet Life's Been Good so far, even though he finished third, beating a half a length on Monday. I actually liked his recent form quite a bit. I thought he was going to be the value at that morning line price. So it's going to depend on scratches, obviously. I can't make much of a case for the 5 or 6. I don't think, or the 4, 5, or 6, really, I don't think that the 6 is fast enough to get the lead. And so I don't really envision a scenario where he can win. So it's just going to be one of those where we kind of have to play it by ear based on the scratches.
All right. It gets us to the third leg, and this is 2,500 fillies. And mares, they're going 5.5, and boy, good to me, the 3 here feels overwhelmingly likely.
Yeah, no argument there whatsoever. 5 down to 2,500 again, I mean, you can't, you know, I grew up betting $2,500 claimers at Trinity Meadows, and, you know, you can't really overrate for a second how big a drop it is when you're going from something like 5 to 2,500. The class lines really, they stay very clear when you're dealing with these generally cheaper horses. The other thing that this one has going for her that you like to see in these kind of races is ascending speed figures, right? I mean, she's a horse that's running better with each passing start, and it seems as if the trainer is spotting her very realistically to get a win on closing night because she just fits this race like a glove. Now, with that said, Mermaid Kisses does too, and since she's gotten into Jared Brown's care, I thought she's run two dramatically improved races. The other horse that scares me a tad is Know What I Mean, who is the main speed on the outside. And, you know, a lot of these cheaper races become merry-go-rounds. It also, I learned during COVID, and I've watched a lot of the stretch drives, especially at Assiniboia, and the outside movers look like they're often getting there, and they just run out of time, or they spin their wheels long enough to give the front-running types more. So be careful about some of the deep closing types. But Yeah, I agree. I mean, Good to Me is obviously a main horse for me. I'll use the 5 and 8 as well. What Up Now, JT, I think is a little dangerous. The two who reached the front last time out and then got collared late. That was against Four Life Claimers. None of the horses in this race would be eligible for a Four Life, so it is a much tougher field. But I think she's at least coming out of a decent enough race to give her some consideration.
Very good. Third leg then gets us to the late double. We got the feature, 5 Claimers, and they're going to go the circuit, 7 furlongs here. I started with Miss Parfait, the 5, Nick, and I thought the 4, and Jay's Brass and Arouse and Go, the 7, the 6-5 favorite. Those felt like the principles, and I didn't think the 1 was impossible here, the 20-1 shot that Wits Memories.
Yeah, I agree. I think Arouse and Go is dangerous because she's probably the confirmed speed. She wired at this level last time out. Now first off the claim by a relatively solid barn. I don't think it seems like a lateral move trainer-wise based on percentages, and it's not as if Tom Gardepi Jr. does anything special off the claim. Miss Parfait is a horse that in a more standard scenario I would probably look to beat, because I don't necessarily love her trying to put forth that same late bid going 7/8 as she did around one turn. She's also worked her way through the conditions and is now facing open company. This is obviously a much tougher race than a 4 life. So, but that being said, you're talking about a horse that's in very good form. And again, we're not dealing with a lot of good form in this race at all. So I think you have to use her. I'm probably going to be pretty simple here and loan A the 7 and loan B the 5. Because I think this is just a situation where you can get a little more clever in some of the other legs and give yourself an opportunity to go a little thin here and just get through.
Well, that gets you to a $2,500 nightcap, where I thought only the 40-1 outsider was easy to eliminate. The rest of this group of 9, I thought I wouldn't be surprised by any of them.
Yeah, I mean, Bite the Bullet Bro is clearly the horse to beat. He's been in good form. He's got enough speed to get the lead. There's really not a ton of pace in here, so, you know, he makes a ton of sense. But at the same time, you've got a horse like Give a Little, who's been running okay and is now open 3,500 down to 2,500. You have Two Steps Faster, who improved last time out with a wide trip and is probably within range in terms of speed figures. The other one that I felt like I could make a case for was Towards the Light, second off a claim. Good effort last time out, was brought back somewhat quickly off the claim, but finished strongly. You know, I think it's mainly those 3, 2, 8, and 9, and it's a little obvious, but it seems to me as if Bite the Bullet Bro is the kind of horse that I'd probably want to have, you know, 2 or 3 extra tickets on, because I just think this is a situation where he can wire this field from the outside. But both Give a Little and Towards the Light seem like horses that you want to have on pretty much as many combinations as you can.
Well, I mean, in terms of somebody interfering from a pace standpoint, isn't the 5 that Otani have potential to intercede and be, you know, be forward? And I'll tell you a horse that has got isolated performances that actually would win here, and that's the 20-1 shot, Anyar, the 7.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit farther down. Well, really, just one bad recent race and was on a sloppy track. So I don't know how much you want to hold that against him. But, yeah, the 11-year-old who kind of tries to grind it out, he'd obviously benefit from a little bit of hitting in front of him, no doubt about it. I don't know how fast Otani is. He was a little closer to the pace last time out. You know, we're flying blind a little bit on pace-related stuff because there are no pace figures on these races, and that has to do with the difficulty of timing. So, I mean, based on what we've seen, it looks like the 9 should clear the field, but yeah, again, I mean, horses like Otani, that's going to be 10-12-1, and Two Steps Faster, Anyar is going to be even bigger than that. These are the kind that if you have the budgetary capability, you want to find a way onto the ticket at a big price.
All right, so if you had to put a reasonable ticket together for everybody, lay it out.
You know, I think as we went through, it looked like, I don't have my numbers written down, but again, I mean, take a look at whether the 6 is scratched in the first leg. yeah, mainly going to be 1-5, a little bit of 2. Second leg, again, check on the 1 and 3 to see if they're going to be in the race. And I would say at that point you want to kind of focus on the 2 and 7. Use the 1 if he ends up running. Fifth race, I think we kind of talked about Good to Me, who looked like she'll be a pretty major player. I would probably also use the 2 and 5, and the 8, of course, who I thought would probably be the speed on the outside.
Right.
And then relatively simple in the 6, 5, and 7. 7 is the main, 5 is a backup. And I would close out the last with the 2, 8, and 9.
There you go. Well, I mean, you can basically for $30 and change, you can go 3 by 4 by 4 by 2 by 3.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of the 20-cent increment.
There it is, Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM 1215, and we you okay for Friday for the first Aqueduct look of the season?
Should be no issue at all. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. And did you have what's your opinion of what we saw Saturday with Taba and Zandon and Cyberknife and everybody?
You know, I will be honest with you, Steve. I think that Taba and Epicenter to me look like the biggest threats to Flightline in the Classic at this point. And I know the biggest variable is what is going to happen with Life is Good on Saturday, and that there's some consideration about that, but I don't envision a scenario where Flightline loses to a horse who wires him. I think he would lose potentially to a horse who came from behind him. And both Epicenter and Taba are going to be doing that. They've now both run races that are fast enough. If Flightline doesn't have the extra oomph on his fastball that he did in the Pacific Classic, obviously, if he runs a race like he did in the Pacific Classic, then the Breeders' Cup Classic is a fait accompli. He can't lose. So I think Taba's outstanding, and I have probably underestimated him. I definitely underestimated him coming into the Haskell, and I thought coming out of the Haskell, he made it very clear that he is a horse of tremendous quality, and I think he validated that very well. You know, there's a period on the turn between the 5/16 and the quarter pole where he's about 2 lengths in front of Cyberknife, and they're both just starting to get ridden at that point. And look at the margin. I mean, he beat Cyberknife by 7 or 8 lengths. And this is a horse who really just seems to grind away. And despite having a bit more of a sprinter's type of profile and pedigree on the damp side, he seems to be able to go long without issue. So I was very, very taken by the performance. I think he's a very, very good horse. As far as Zandon goes, I can't wait for the horse to cut back. He needs to go around one turn. He's doing all of the classic, I need to cut back things, which is making a move, getting into contention, and then flattening out. And he just doesn't quite have that finish. And when horses like him can sort of seduce you in an effort like the Bluegrass, they can fool you into thinking they're routers. But when you think about it, the Bluegrass was a race where he was able to gallop along and then run for 2 furlongs. And a one-run closing type, that's exactly what they do. So, you know, when he cuts back, I hope it's hearing now that Charge It is on a trail that might include the Cigar Mile, that Zandon having an opportunity to cut back in a race like that, I think he would just be tremendously interesting. I read that Brad Cox seems pretty intent on running Cyberknife in the Dirt Mile, if anything, in the Breeders' Cup, and that would seem to be the best spot for him. I don't really think he excels at a mile and a quarter, and quite honestly, you know, I know trainers nowadays are pretty loath to run against horses that have beaten them. But really, I mean, Cyberknife has proven that Epicenter and Taba are both better than him, so really no reason to press on and hope that you can have a scenario unfold where you could beat a horse like Flightline. So no shame in going to the Dirt Mile and looking for opportunities as a 4-year-old.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. Nick, thank you. That was great. We'll talk to you on Friday in advance of the big cards this weekend at Aqueduct.
You bet, my friend. Thank you.
Nick Tamaro, folks, there's your Assiniboia night action and the end of the season. Speaking of the Assiniboia opinions, I retweeted the AmWager / Form to Win views, and I'm going to pull that back up. Here we go. And Papo is going to join us. And I do want to follow up that conversation or that that question I asked him. I wanted to see if he went back and looked at the cotillion. The form to win looks for the stakes this weekend had strong results, and three out of four a couple of different times. And the one that really I was curious about was the cotillion, and you know, then going back, and one of the exercises that is always true no matter what handicapping you do is, you know, going back and figuring out, you know, why was that horse not necessarily on my radar screen? And, you know, why, and in this case, you know, what, especially given the pace scenario and given her interest in being on the front end. And here's Papo now. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
You know, and I'm not sure. I know you were in meetings yesterday, so you might not have heard me float this question. But and I have not had a chance to do it myself either, which was and now might be too late. But to go and retrofit or try to figure out how you know, society was not a setting issue, and maybe the confusion from her you know, winning or running you know, shorter than the distance. What was your thoughts on that Saturday?
Yeah, so I go back on Monday, Steve, and go through all the weekend races and recalculate things and see if I would have come up on the winner. So the filter that I used for that particular race was a mile and a 16th to a mile and an eighth. She had 1 mile and a 16th race and 1 9 furlong race. Now, her 9 furlong race was awful, if you get back and look at the chart.
Right.
So if I would have factored that race out, which you have the ability to do with Form to Win, you just click edit and take that race out, she moved up to third on no matter how you ran it.
Hmm.
So, you know, just oversight online. I don't look at all the charts necessarily for every race. Although even looking on the long common on Form to Win, it mentioned that she was ranked. She didn't break well. So I think it was a combination of that. And then also just Todd's horses didn't show up. Neither did Adair Manor. For Bob, so probably a combination of both. But if you would have factored out that race, she was in the top three.
And yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, it's easy to say now that, for instance, Green Up that she had a regression off of a series of forward moves, and you know, not unusual to see a horse react, but you know, at the same time, you're drawn in by the progress she had been making, and a win over that track. Usually, I mean, look at Scaramouche in retrospect. I mean, Scaramouche, that the win over the track and the presence on the track certainly, you know, added, and to me, the 14 post hurt a little bit, but yeah, I just was curious. I because it's always an exercise, and especially for those that are going to be, you know, playing with the slides and playing with the settings and learning the, you know, some of the tricks that you know, that Papo has laid out for you on Form to Win in the tutorials. That's a good exercise to go back and to see, you know, what did I have to do to move a horse like this that wasn't at first glance was not part of the, you know, the picture. I tweeted up the Assiniboia snapshots, and I was just kind of juxtaposing them to what we talked about with Nick just now, and then also what I had come up with myself, and there's plenty of harmony, actually.
Yeah, see, it sounds like there was a lot of overlap in that sequence. I mean, those flaming races, Steve, they're tough, so it's you know, depending on how you want to structure your tickets. I think race 5 was a tough one. They're just so close. I think Form to Win had 4 horses that it liked, and they weren't separated by all that much. So, it'll be a good lesson in ticket structure, you know, especially if you're playing within a decent budget.
Going, I just wrote the numbers down on your, you know, the way you broke it out, and in that nightcap, which I thought was murder. Nick wants the 289, and Form to Win likes the 892. So there's the first harmony. The seven, that arouse and go. You know, Nick is talking the seven and the five. And I was as well, actually, among my final selections. And so the seven is the top pick here, arouse and go on Form to Win. They like the three and the four. You know, the four certainly came up with Nick as well. But then 852 in the fifth race, and Nick's got the 528 as well as the three if she runs. Nick was talking 127 and a little three in the fourth race, and 3752 on the Form to Win snapshot. And then 2-4, we don't know if the six is running, maybe not, probably not. 241, and Nick likes 125. So there's a lot of harmony, and at 20 cents, Papo, I think we can all, you know, put in a little pop and see if we can't, you know, make a little something out of this big force out. And there should be, I mean, this thing should get to like 3 million, you would think.
Oh, yeah, especially with the late post, you know, for us to get up early, it'll be put it in and then wake up in the morning and see how
that's
we
it,
did.
Right?
I don't stay up late during the week, that's for sure. But, yeah, see, before we get off, I just wanted to say for those people that are down in Florida, you know, I'm from Tampa. Spent a good 25 years of my life down there. So those people, praying for all those people, especially along Venice Beach and everything. And then as well as the people in Puerto Rico where my family's from, they're still recovering from Fiona. You know, they haven't necessarily got over the last hurricane that came in there 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So, combination of, you know, tropical systems, and just pray for all those people involved. And, you know, even weeks after, I have an idea this will probably be an event that's going to, you know, change people's lives forever. So just pray that most people make it out with their lives and minimal damage, hopefully.
Exactly. Casey just texted me a little bit ago. That, you know, the storm on the East Coast, it was just starting. So we're going to see how things shake out and hope everybody gets through. And, Papo, I appreciate this. We'll talk on Friday, ideally.
Yes, sounds great, Steve. I'll talk to you then.
Papo Morales, everybody, and Form to Win for AmWager. And you can write integrated into your AmWager bet pad. Thanks to Papo and Nick for a Cineboya look. Todd Fincher, tough situation he's dealing with Mr. Peacock, and Sid Fernando. Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And earlier, Dick Powell, and Dick got beat in the third leg. So annoying, but it happens. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Back with you tomorrow for the big Thursday get-together, and we'll talk to you in the morning, all right? Get lucky today.
Oh, there goes a Buick 49. Black sheep of the angels riding down the line.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 mile